Welcome back to KWTO. A very special guest on the program today, one of the Dothage brothers. Why don't you introduce yourself for the listeners?
My name is Dale Dothage, and I'm the oldest and better looking of the two brothers.
I love it so much. Dale, give us a little bit of background about yourself. Where are you from? Tell us a little bit about your family.
Lived in Springfield, Missouri since I was five, and I worked at Harder House as their general manager and chief operating officer for about 40 years. I'm retired now about 7.5 years, and so I'm still, it's all I ever did was the grocery business. So
I love it. And do you have kids in the area?
Yes, I have my oldest daughter, Carrie, and her husband, Matt, live in Mount Vernon. And my youngest daughter, Jennifer, and her husband, Kirk, live in Raymore, Missouri.
Oh, I love, growing up, I used to wrestle at Raypak.
So. Oh, that's where my oldest, youngest daughter's oldest child goes to Raypak. She's going to be a senior now.
I love it so much. Okay, we've been talking a little bit about the Honor Flight of the Ozarks, and you've had a chance to be a participant of that. But let's talk a little bit. Tell us about your military background. Where did you serve and when did you serve?
I served from 1970 to 1976. And I joined when I was a senior in high school. And when I went to basic training, the fourth week I was there, my lottery number came up and it was 9. So I would have been there no matter what I did. But it was... I went because I felt some duty, honor, and country. That's what was instilled within me. And during that time frame was when a lot of young men my age was given trouble to the efforts, and I just didn't feel that way.
Where did you basic training at?
Fort Leonard Wood.
And, you know, we've had a few of these interviews, but I've not dove in on what was basic training like back then. How long was it? What type of activities did you have to go through?
It was hell.
That's what I would say. I feel like there's been this, I don't want to say minimization of the challenges now, but people I talk to from a past generation are always like, it was the hardest, most difficult thing I ever did. And you sort of find yourself in those moments.
I would like to maybe clarify that a little bit. It was hard, but it was probably one of the most rewarding things that I ever did. I am so faithful to our country and our military, and I feel honored to have been able to go to basic training in AIT. I didn't have to go to Vietnam, basically because my blood type is AB negative, and that's 0.5% of the whole world's population has that blood type. And so I would have never seen any active duty in the battlegrounds or anything. So they just left me back. And I felt bad about that. But, you know, there was this one soldier that told me, said, don't feel bad about it. You're doing so much more than what most of the young men my age were doing. But he said, I want to tell you something. We need good people like you back home as much as we need people going to the front lines. So even though I didn't serve front lines, it didn't mean that I wasn't there with them.
Dale, tell us a little bit about, when did you first hear about Honor Flight of the Ozarks?
I met somebody who was associated with Honor Flight. And they found out that I was a veteran, and they want to know if I was interested in filling out an application. And so I told them that I felt that I wasn't really deserving of any of that, that I felt World War II and the actual veterans that went overseas should be going. And they said, absolutely not. You were still in the same service that they were, and you served in a different capacity. So my brother and me, I'll call his name Bob so he can say that I mentioned his name. We both filled out applications the same time. And we got accepted about 3 years after we had turned in applications. But then COVID came, and they canceled it for almost 3 years. And then we were the very first flight to leave since COVID. So we felt honored to get to go.
So you get on the buses. What's the first memorial you go to?
We were at the World War II Memorial.
And as you walk through, they have World War II, they have Vietnam, they have Korea. Which one did you enjoy the most or feel like was the most surreal?
I probably enjoyed the World War II Memorial most, but the Vietnam Wall was the one that was most touching to me since it was in my era. And I did not know anybody that had passed, but it didn't matter. It was all my brothers that was there. And you just look at that wall just continues with all those names. And you just think about all the things that they went through for our freedoms. And people just don't give enough credit to what that really means.
Did as you go through these different memorials, what do you guys do? You know, just basics of the day. What do you do for lunch?
They had that prepared for us. I think they used Arby's a lot, but we didn't eat roast beef sandwiches. But they had chips and a sandwich and water for us, and they had everything so planned. It was really nice.
So you finish up with the different tours. You come back to the airport. Did you have a police escort through the city?
Well, because of COVID, Washington, D.C. suspended those escorts. That would have been nice, but we understood. You know, I mean, we were all, every one of us was being greeted and honored, and it was so humbling to do that. But so that really wasn't important, you know.
Okay. Give us, you get back on the flight, you start the trip back. We've had some conversations that there was a mail call on the plane on the trip back. Talk about that.
This is probably the most humbling part of the whole trip for me. It was May 10th. But on May 3rd, a week prior to that, my mother passed away. And I had not cried for my mom yet. I knew I would sometime. I just didn't know when. And when they had mail call, I got a great big yellow manila envelope full of mail. And the fourth letter that I picked up to read was from my mother. And I just lost it. I couldn't read what she had written to me because the tears were just flowing so hard and so long. I cried all the way to Springfield. I told my brother, who was crying too, I said, you know, it takes a bigger man to cry than it does for one that won't cry. And we hugged each other. But what was unique about that, we realized that was the last letter that our mom ever wrote. And here we get it after she's passed. But at her graveside services, we were told, and I'll never forget it, it'll stay with me forever, your parents can still give you conversation and direction, even in their passing. And, oh my goodness, here mom had written a letter telling Bob and me how she was proud of us and couldn't wait to see us when we get home. Little did I realize seeing her when we get home is when we're going to meet with her in heaven. Mm-hmm. But still, it was still appropriate, but I was proud that I had cried with my mom, and I know she was proud of us, and so that was nice.
When you land back in Springfield, is there a welcome back ceremony?
Well, I had always heard that there would be, But where we exited the plane, we were all by ourselves, and they were giving us direction to go through these big doors. And when they opened up those doors, oh my goodness, there was honor guards from the highway patrol, the police department, the ROTC. Every branch of the service had a honor guard. The armed forces had a band playing. Everybody was thanking us for our service, and they had snapped to attention and gave us salute through everything. And then we get past all of the honor guards and all of the people waving flags and hugging us and thanking us for our service. And you go, what did I do to deserve this? And I don't mean that negative. I mean, in a positive response, it was, you know, the thing that I was thinking of is the Vietnam veterans, when they came back from war, basically got no welcome. They got welcome this time. And it was such a happy time. And I've never been a part of anything that has been so high volume and high keyed interest. And it was all for us. And so the only way I knew to reciprocate was to say thanks and hug people as I went through the line. They tell me that they estimated in excess of 5,000 people. And to me, it could have been a million.
That's
amazing.
It
was just unbelievable. So, you know, it's...
Dale, would you, you know, obviously there's a lot of veterans that have heard about it, and some are of the opinion, they're like, well, I don't just want to commiserate about the war. I don't know that I want to do that. Would you recommend it to other veterans?
What do you mean?
You know, I've talked to some veterans, and they're like, I don't know if I want to go on something like this. It feels like it just takes me back too much. Do you think it's worthwhile to go for?
Well, I'm sorry that I asked for clarity there, but I was telling you how I didn't feel worthy. So that is the normal response of people. But I'll tell you that you got to remember, this isn't just about you. You did what was the right thing to do. And people want to give you honor for once. And so I would highly recommend anybody to get that attitude out of their head if they have the opportunity to do it. For me, it was one of the greatest honors I've ever had in my whole life. And I still, to this day, do not feel anywhere near worthy. But, you know, when I was sitting in y'all's lobby, y'all have all that stuff on the wall about unity and working together, and it's all about somebody else. It's not about you. But the last thing on that wall said, those that accomplish the most are the ones that brag the least. And so that's very true. Within the service, you know, those that are bragging the least probably have done the most. And so get that attitude out of your head and let the people honor you the way you deserve.
We just heard from Dale Dothage. Dale, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for letting me be here.
Appreciate it.